Hey, football fans, this is Diana Rossini from The Athletic. Get the top stories in pro football snapped directly to your inbox with our latest NFL newsletter, Scoop City. Jacob Robinson and I will bring you the daily scoop of top NFL articles, posts, and podcasts every Monday to Friday. Sign up for free now at theathletic.com/scoop.
Ultimately, I'm going to keep saying it. Get 1% better every day. Just get a little bit better every day.
Hey, welcome. Stephen Holder. I'm here with Zach Kiefer, and this is your latest episode of 1% Better. The Colts, a little better, a little bit. They won big on Thursday night, 45-30 over the New York Jets. I think it was probably the game we thought it would be because I hoped it wouldn't be close because I didn't want to cover a nail biter with the Jets because that would create all kinds of stories locally, right? So I guess they handled their business. They're 4-5. They've got 8 games to go. I still don't know very much about them, but because we didn't learn anything really, right?
Right.
But I think let's just kind of contextualize what happened, right? So 45-30, it sounds great. I'm not going to like hammer the Colts for this game. I don't think that their lapses late in the game override the fact that they were like incredibly dominant, right? For most of this game. However, Josh Johnson, I think that's his name. No, I'm kidding.
Yes.
I know Josh. I've known Josh a long time. Great guy. Not necessarily a premier quarterback, okay? So, Josh Johnson, you're playing...
Last night might disagree with you.
Right, that's my point. So, you're playing the third-string quarterback. You're playing the Jets, who, by the way, defensively, that might be the worst team... That might be the worst defense I've seen this year.
But they're not... Well, yeah, and we can get into this. But they're not a horrible defense. I mean, they were last night,
they played on paper.
I mean... Yeah. 211 yards before contact for the Colts running backs. That's amazing. 7 yards a carry before contact. That's amazing. But anyway.
If you just saw this game on paper, you'd be like, no, there's no way that happened.
Like, that never happens in the NFL.
Right? So, anyway. And then, of course, Jonathan Taylor had his requisite, you know, 80-yard touchdown. Where it was only 73, I think.
So, it was 78, so let's
78,
not,
whatever. Yeah. So, look, I mean, you know, lots of good, lots of concerns as well, but that's all right. I mean, so let me ask you this. Do you in any way, shape, or form feel differently about the Colts this morning than you did yesterday morning?
Yeah, a little bit. And I'm going to start with the offensive side of the ball. There's nothing wrong with 45 points. There's nothing wrong with 533 total yards.
That's a lot of points.
Yeah, I don't care who you're playing, right? That's a big deal, right? 533 yards is the most since the Manning era. I believe, the most since the Manning era. That's important. Mm-hmm. They've got 30 straight and 4 straight games, the first time since 2010, the most points since 2014. So, I mean, I don't want to jump too quickly here, but Frank's got this offense rolling. Now, I'm not excusing the ending against Tennessee, right? That was on the offense. That was on the quarterback and the play caller. But you're seeing a two-headed monster erupt, and Carson's playing pretty well against bad teams. So you've got Carson, and then you've got these two studs that are emerging. And I'll start with Pittman, who just seems to get better every week. He can catch anything in traffic. The touchdown last night, he's got 5 touchdowns, I think, in 4 games, or 4 touchdowns in 3 games. Either way, the wide receiver one debate is no longer a debate, and it's been fun because we saw this back in Westfield. If you remember, we would have these side conversations being like, he looks different. He looks angry, and you're seeing it on the field. And we should probably mention 28. He's pretty good. He's the best running back that's playing right now. Like, I don't watch every team, but I can't imagine the guy playing better than that. The dude's got 1,000 scrimmage yards in 9 games. He's got more than anybody in the league, 1,114 scrimmage yards. He's got 6 straight games with 100 rushing with 100 rushing yards and a touchdown for the first time since LaDainian Tomlinson in 2006. I mean, he's going to be your rushing champ, barring a huge change this year. So between those two, the offense was a lot of fun last night. And we should mention that Frank Reich really had it going. He really had it going. The Jets didn't have an answer. He was getting his guys wide open. And I'm not just talking about Danny Pinter. But I don't think it's bad to walk away and say, they can score. They can definitely score right now. Now, the defense, that's a whole different story.
Yeah, so let's continue the offensive point for a little bit, though. I think they've scored 30 points in four straight games, which is, I believe, the first time since 2010, if I'm not mistaken. So,
correct.
You know, talking about the Manning era, here we go again. And so, you know, you're starting to see, I don't want to say Star Wars, but they're like Star Wars light.
No, don't say that.
They're Star Wars light a little bit right now. And I don't know if they can do it against, you know, Tampa and Buffalo and, you know, teams of that ilk, but we'll see. I mean, to be completely honest, they kind of have put up numbers against the better teams too. They just haven't been able to score enough.
Don't you think this is the offense Frank envisioned? We talked to him when they traded for Wentz. Don't you think this is kind of what he saw in his head? This kind of offense with this kind of balance?
I do. I think you're seeing a couple of things. You're seeing, first of all, the RPOs, I think they're great. I think they're working. And I think Carson Wentz is the perfect quarterback for RPOs because I've talked about this before. His ball handling is like top level. It's elite. The way he's able to sell the fakes. And then he's making pretty good decisions generally on those RPOs and getting the ball out generally pretty quickly when they do it. And I think that's one of the reasons Frank Reich does it, because it's generally like one read. You know, it's like, all right,
right,
boom, the fake. If you're going to fake it, it's like, okay, it has to be quick because the defensive end is coming. So it kind of takes the thought process out of Carson Wentz's hands beyond the fake, if that makes sense. So it's like he's not going to make three different reads. It's like, okay, I'm going to either hand it or I'm going to throw it to my first option. Boom. You know, and that's kind of how that works. So I don't mind those. I think they're productive. They tend to get some yards on those plays. I also think that they're doing a good job of also getting Nyheim Hines involved, which is a tough thing to do sometimes, you know, because he and Taylor overlap. So they're getting everybody involved. You know, Mo Alie-Cox, a couple of touches. You always like to see that. So, yeah, that was definitely like a PhD level offensive game for Frank Reich and Carson Wentz. I mean,
they needed it.
Yeah, that's what we talked about. That is what it was supposed to look like. And the chunk plays are just coming one after another after another. And, I mean, that's how you got to play in today's NFL. They are a team that is, or at least an offense, I should say, that is absolutely ideal for what you want in today's NFL. Now, I don't know if they can do it every week. And certainly they have had lapses, including at times last week. But there are times when they look like one of the ideal 2021 offenses out there in the NFL. So we'll see. But I like it. I think it's exactly what Frank envisioned. And I think that he and Carson Wentz, they truly, truly are on the same page. They are like-minded. They know each other, understand each other. And I think the trust that he has in Carson Wentz, for better or worse, I think it's growing by the day. And I think it's been earned on Carson Wentz's part. So
yeah,
and last thing I'll just say though is like he just has to continue to prove that like the Titans game, that needs to be the one-off. Okay. And so far it is.
Are we going to get that answer for a couple weeks? I mean, I don't think you get that answer last night. I don't think you get that answer next week against the Jags. Right. They'll probably do a very similar thing, which is fine. And I'm not going to knock the Colts for that, but they'll get to 5-5 and then you find out what you're really about. And by that, I mean the team and the quarterback. Carson's on pace right now for 33-7, and I think that's just about where he was in 17 when he had his MVP-type season, right? So you get an extra game, and he didn't light it on fire to start the season. There was the ankles. He was a little up and down early. We kind of always pictured that after really no training camp for him, no preseason games, new team, et cetera. That was going to be a slow start, we expected. But, you know, that's better than Rivers last year. Rivers was 24-11 last year. Jacoby was 18-6 the year before. And then Luck was 39-15 in 2018. So Wentz is not playing as well as Luck did in 18. I'm not saying that, but I can see this offense heating up. And they didn't have a talent like Jonathan Taylor in 2018 either. So if this guy keeps doing what he's doing, Carson will keep playing well. But like you said, you're not going to get an answer until they get into a tight situation late in a game. They have to win. And Carson is going to have to win one of those this season. I'm excited to see if he can do it. He let him down against the Titans, but they're going to have some chances. And I definitely think in talking to some people in the building, they're confident that they can play with really good teams. They've shown it a couple times.
They've proven that, right. It's about finishing.
They just got to finish. And so last night, you know, talking to Frank Reich, talking to Darius Leonard, talking to a bunch of these guys, they were like, you know, it was fun. We won. We needed this. But we still didn't really finish. And that's sort of the takeaway I had to transition to the defense. They let Josh Johnson throw for 300 yards and three touchdowns. Like, that's a real thing. And I don't want to hear late game garbage yards. Like, their starters were still in, and they could not stop the Jets. That's concerning.
Yeah, so there's like this dichotomy that I think about sometimes. Offensively, I think you can make an argument that they are a lot more potent than they were last season. I mean, I don't even think it's an argument. I think it's pretty clear. Now, are they better overall offensively? They're not as efficient, maybe.
Oh, they're more explosive, though.
But they're definitely more explosive.
They didn't have Taylor at this level last year, and they didn't have a Pittman like this.
Right. I mean, offensive efficiency is great. Okay, like I know that's a great, great thing. Frank Reich loves that. But at the end of the day, like, take the Chiefs. Like, remember when the Chiefs were good, like last year? remember, like, even the last couple of years when the Chiefs were really rolling, they weren't necessarily the most efficient team. But damn it, they were going to score. And they were going to go up and down the field, and you couldn't stop them. And
they could score in a hurry.
Yes. And you see that from time to time with this team now. And I'm not comparing them to the Chiefs of the past 2 years. I'm just saying they have some qualities like those offenses. And so I care a little less about the efficiency. So great, they had a lot of efficiency with Phillip Rivers. But, you know, how far can that take you, right?
That now, had to this be their year, game, right?
Right, yeah. Exactly. They were playing to their strengths. Now, this year, you have this exciting, potent offense that can score in a flash. And yet, on the other side of the ball, what you have is a defense that has gone the other way, which is remarkable to me because this was not what we anticipated. We thought this would be the other way around. We thought this would be a transitional year for the offense because new quarterback, obviously, you know, the offensive line had some injuries early and they were just trying to figure some things out. You figured, okay, look, if it takes some time for this offense to really figure itself out, you could kind of understand that, right? We all thought this would be a transitional year on offense. What we didn't anticipate was the defense going in reverse. I thought the defense was going to take a step. Now, granted, they haven't. I think it's really been a matter of their main players not playing at the highest level. I mean, Darius Leonard is doing all he can, granted. But is he himself? No, there's no question. Like there are plays that Darius Leonard right now absolutely cannot make because of that ankle.
The first third down, that reverse that they ran and he missed the tackle. Yep. I haven't seen him whiff on a tackle like that. I mean, certainly not last season and the seasons before.
It's not something that is in his nature or certainly in his history. So that's a factor. But it's more than that, though. That's a thing. If it was just injuries, I could like stomach it. And it is injuries on some level. Like Julian Blackman, you can't replace that guy, right? Kari Willis, I think, is a great player, even though I don't think he's played great this year. But he's been a very good player for them. So those are like big losses. But at the same time, I mean, like Xavier Rhodes, like, get this guy off the field. I mean,
what did I say last week?
I can't take it anymore.
How long? Okay, here's the question.
Get him off the field.
I know where the fans stand because they tweeted me. How long can the team take this? I'm not saying there's a better answer, but how can it be worse? Problem.
I mean, like, I think Isaiah Rodgers. Is there time for Isaiah Rodgers at this point? Like,
I mean, that dude's going to hustle at the very least, right?
What difference does it make?
Oh, man. You don't think Tom Brady's going to see that on tape and destroy him? He's going to go at 27 all game, and Josh Allen's going to do the same thing, and they'll probably move Diggs over there. And it's just.
At least I know Rocky Sin is going to compete.
It's done with Xavier.
At least I know Rocky Sin is going to compete.
Yeah, he'll give up some plays. He'll make some plays. He'll compete, though.
But, you know, you can knock the guy however you want. But, damn it, he's going to compete, and you are in for a fight with that guy, okay? And I get it. Look, nobody's perfect, and he certainly isn't. But this guy, Xavier Rhodes, he is not competing, period. But it's all of it, though. It's not any one guy on defense, really. It boils down to we knew a couple of things were going to be problematic for them. Or potentially problematic. Even though I thought the defense would be good, I thought, okay, for them to be really good, they would have to have at least stable play at defensive back, cornerback in particular, and then they would need to get at least an adequate pass rush. And they've really gotten neither one.
Nope.
And so what does that leave? That's like two-thirds of your defense. So I don't know what to tell you. You know,
it doesn't matter what your scheme is. It doesn't matter what alignment you have on defense. If you cannot get to the quarterback, you're not going to succeed in today's league. They're not getting to the quarterback. They're giving Josh Johnson time. They're giving Tannehill time. These guys are all good enough to beat you when the receivers are wide open in the middle of the field, which is that soft spot in their zone. And then secondly, when you just don't get to them. They had one sack last night on a third-string practice squad quarterback. And and that's just going to – the better the quarterback you play, the less time he needs. So, I kind of walked out of the stadium last night thinking, this defense, I just don't trust it. I just don't trust it.
No, and, you know, it's funny. Like, I hear from various readers and fans who – say, you know, well, you know, you did kind of hype this defense up a little bit, and that's fine. That's fair. And I think I go back and I replay this in my head, and it's like, well, there was a reason for that, okay? I thought, for example, the last time we saw this defense in 2020, it was on the field in Buffalo, and I actually thought they acquitted themselves pretty well. To be honest, if they make a couple plays on offense, maybe make a field goal, they win that game.
Yep.
Right, the defense gave them a chance to win that game. And here is a year later, or less than a year later, and the Bills are kind of the team to beat in the AFC with an offense that is among the best in the league. Well, they didn't look like it that day. So, I mean, you know, there was evidence. And it wasn't just that. It was making plays against Aaron Rodgers. And that was a huge win, right? And I get that they made their yards that day. But at the end of the day, Colts made the defensive plays they needed to make. And I probably gave the pass rush a little too much. I don't think I believed in it necessarily, but I do think I thought they would have more of a presence, and it just hasn't been. The one thing I'll say, though, I do think this year's draft picks are going to be okay. I'm starting to see some flash from Kwity Paye and from Deo Adengbo. I think those two guys, I think they have it in them. And I hope to God they do, because nobody else has given them anything. So
they got Bed Banigou, man. I mean, what's the problem?
Oh. Well, where was he last night? Oh, wait, he was inactive. My bad.
And this is a good transition to, I think, the larger point, and you wrote about this last night, is they got 8 games to go. They're 4-5. They haven't beat a good team, right? They've lost 8 straight to teams with a winning record. They've lost 4 this year. They have not beat a good team. They beat the crap out of bad teams. They did it last night. They did it when the Texans were here, etc. Does it bring – if this season doesn't go the way they want it, which means a playoff berth, is that a referendum on the way this team has been built and the way it is coached? And that's Ballard and that's Reich. And you mentioned in your story, like, you know, signing Xavier Rhodes and basically a secondary full of spare parts, right? They have not invested heavily in the secondary. They took a big chance this year by not signing a free agent at pass rush. They decided to roll the dice with some young guys and some holdovers. You don't love the pass rush right now. And this is where you're at. And I think you have to be concerned that if you've done, they should be 6-3 right now. I don't think that's too much of a stretch to say they beat Tennessee, they beat Baltimore. But that's the if game. And do you think it's going to get interesting on that front in terms of the way this team is built? And do you think it ultimately will change the way Chris Ballard approaches free agency in the spring?
I think that unless they have just an unbelievable stretch run here, okay, and I'm talking about, like, you know, 6-2 type stuff, you know, which I cannot envision that happening.
But they're playing better, but that's hard to see.
It's just hard to see. Yeah. It's not as easy a schedule on the back end as we anticipated it was going to be. You know what I mean? Like, we thought it would be an easier schedule once they got past that gauntlet up front, but it's actually sneaky hard down the stretch. So we'll see. But anyway, what I think is going to happen is, unless they have this an unbelievable finish and get in the playoffs, like safely get in the playoffs, I think what you're going to see is, if you don't see this, this is a problem. But I think what should happen is everything should be reevaluated. I'm not saying any. I'm not talking about people getting fired or any of that. I'm not talking about that. Nobody's getting fired. Stop it.
However, when do you reevaluate your approach?
But that is the question. That is the question. And this has to come from Jim Irsay, too, on some level. I think Jim Irsay, and he's smart enough to understand this. You know, he's like, all right, I'm going to be patient. I'm going to let you guys go through and do this the way you believe in. You know, go ahead and carry out your philosophy. And I think a good owner does that. At some point, you want to see results. This was a key year for me, I think, because he go 11-5 last year. I think you feel pretty good about that team. You feel like you upgraded that quarterback. I mean, if you ask them, okay, not my words, they think that. Yeah. So if you upgrade a quarterback, you got the whole team back, basically. And you look like you're lost at times this year.
Yeah.
So that is not progress. So if your philosophy is not producing progress, well, then I got to ask questions as an owner or as a fan, for that matter, someone who's paying money to sit in the stands. So I think I don't know what the changes should or will be, but you have to reevaluate everything. And I think, honestly, you have to reevaluate the entire roster. You know, this whole run it back philosophy has not paid off. And sometimes running it back is not the right move. So I think jobs should be at stake. When I say jobs, I mean players. I think that everything from strategic decisions to free agency decisions, all of that has to be under a microscope. I think really what we've seen already this year, I think, is enough to prompt all of these examinations.
Yeah, yeah, they need to happen. They need to happen. And it's two fronts for me. It's one, it's okay, Chris, if you're going to be patient and you're going to lead on the draft, then you got to hit on these draft picks. Bowd has hit on a lot of them. We know that. And he's hit on, you know, every year there's we see more. Pittman and Taylor, those are great picks in the same round, right? Darius and Quentin, we talked about that. You guys all know that. But you can't miss on second rounders like Ben Bandicoot, who has given you nothing in 3 years at a pass rush position you desperately need help at. And that kills you. And you've whiffed on pass rush, and you wrote about this a couple weeks ago, over and over. And that's damning. And if you can't figure that position out, that's going to be trouble in the future. And that's when you start to reevaluate your approach to that position and maybe how you spend money in the offseason. And then secondly, the entire defensive scheme, I think, needs to be evaluated. And Matt Eberflus has not really impressed me this year. They can beat up on the Texans, and they can beat on the Dolphins with Jacoby Brissett back there missing 40 throws, but they need to hang with a good quarterback. They need to disrupt a good quarterback, because every single time they play one, it seems like that guy has a career day. And the Colts have had, I think I heard Rick Venturi mention this the other day, they've had 6 quarterbacks come in this season and have career days against them. Jeez. And Josh Johnson added to the list last night. That's concerning. And I know that they don't have a pass rush that they want, but that is the hard question you need to answer in the offseason. That's the hard question that Frank Reich needs to answer if he wants to continue to run this type of defense. Because essentially, he lets Eberflus do his thing, right? Essentially, he just lets him run the scheme, mm-hmm. set up the game plan, call the plays. It's Matt's game over there. Frank handles the offense. I think that's the biggest concern. We'll see how they play down the stretch. But I've seen enough to be pretty concerned, because Brady and the Bucks and Allen and the Bills are going to dice that defense up if they play like they did last night, especially in the second half.
Yeah, and then Kyler Murray and company, for that matter. So the other thing, or I guess I'll just add to what you said about Frank Reich and Matt Eberflus. I think it's very much a one-man show over there, as you said. I think Frank Reich's role with the defense, and I've talked to him about this at times in the past, what his role is basically he'll sit in on a handful of meetings through the week. He'll make suggestions. He'll give advice. He'll kind of, you know, he's not even overseeing. He's just kind of like, it's like quality control almost. You know what I mean? So he's not in there telling anybody what to do. He's not formulating the game plan. He's not doing any of those things. It's all Matt Eberflus. And he generally is in agreement with most of what they're doing over there. So, but what I do wonder is, you know, I don't know that there's going to be some overhaul of the scheme, because Chris Ballard is also very much, well, I mean, the reason Matt Eberflus is here is Chris Ballard,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, that's another element
so,
to this that's
like,
interesting.
Let's don't forget, right?
Right,
so
right.
It complicates things. Like,
he wanted this scheme.
Yeah. So if Matt Eberflus were to God forbid, get fired. I don't know that we're there yet. But like, let's just say you made a change at defensive coordinator. This is very, very, very hypothetical, to be clear. That change is probably not going to be singularly a Frank Reich decision. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's complicated because, again, the GM is the guy who is the reason he's here. So, I mean, he was going to be the defensive coordinator regardless of who the coach was.
That should be Frank's call, though. Frank should be able to hire and fire coaches at his pleasure, right? That's what a head coach should do. And he has rehired Matt Eberflus, in a sense, every year since.
Right.
But I think that's a question that needs to be asked because this defense has given up a lot of yards, a lot of completions, and it's going to be interesting down the stretch.
Well, you're right. First of all, you are right, yes, that it has to be Frank Reich's decision. But I also think Frank Reich is very smart and understands dynamics. And he would maybe get himself into a battle with Chris Ballard. It's probably too strong a word. But, like, they don't want, like, sort of a mini power struggle there. So I think Frank is probably a humble enough guy that would be a discussion. It would not be an independent decision from his perspective. You know what I'm saying? But anyway, be that as it may, I think here's what I think is more reasonable or more likely than a change at defensive coordinator. I think the change would be more likely, let's augment this scheme a little bit. Let's tweak it. Let's be more aggressive. Let's do some things that we haven't done in the past. You see this a lot on offense around the league where oftentimes, sometimes you get a change in the play caller, but nobody gets fired, but maybe you change the play caller. Or I'm not saying that's going to happen here, but I'm just giving examples of how things change sometimes without personnel changes or staff changes. Sometimes you'll see the teams add elements to their scheme. I think there can be some of that. There's room for that discussion. They don't blitz very much. They blitz the fourth lowest rate in the NFL. It's part of their scheme. Maybe that should change. I don't know. But I also think at the end of the day, the personnel is a problem. There's no question about it. The personnel is a problem. And I mean, you have to wonder, did Ballard drop the ball by not trying to go out there and make a consequential signing at either defensive back or defensive end? Because I think
has his patience and his prudence.
Yeah.
Is it ever going to pay off? Because it doesn't look like it is right now, essentially.
Right. It does feel like this was kind of a wait and see year a little bit because, you know, they knew the money would be tight. And so that was a factor. And then they also wanted to see what some of these young guys could do. And now, particularly up front. And now we see. Not much. So, all right, you have your answer. So I'll give them this year. But, like, next year, you have to – you can't circle back next year and say, all right, you know, we're going to try this again. No, you can't do that. No, you cannot do that. It's not good enough. So I think that much is clear. So what do you think – is, all right, within the context of this conversation, right? Meaning what happens down the stretch and what those results mean for the future. What do you think sort of the ranges are for, like, big changes or just, you know, kind of keep going? Does that make sense? In other words, like, you know, these last eight games, what happens if they go 4-4? You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, which is probably
where does that leave them?
Right.
Right. Where does that leave them? Is that cause for major change or is that cause for just some tweaks, stay the course? You know what I mean? Like, so I wonder, like, what does it need to be? I don't know that there's an answer. It's hypothetical.
Yeah.
I'm just wondering.
Assuming there isn't the extreme, right? So the extreme would be on one side, they go on this great run, they make the playoffs, we'll see what happens. The other extreme would be they just collapse. I don't see that happening. I think they're playing pretty well right now. Let's say they do the 4-4 or, you know, 5-3 or whatever, and they just miss, right? Miss by a game or two. I think it starts with the defensive coordinator. And I'm not saying you make a change because I want to see the last part of the season, but I think those conversations that we just talked about, they need to be had. And they need to have these discussions on the scheme and the philosophy and the moves. So it's not just on Eberflus, but it's on the philosophy as well. And there's just so many times this season I've thought to myself, God, if they just had Justin Houston on that third down. Like, it's just amazing how much those sacks change the game. And they just come close, and they come close, and they come close. And then that quarterback completes a pass. And then they complete, you know, the 3rd and 15, and the Colts stay on the field, and they give up points. And Ursay needs to ask those questions because 5 years into Chris Ballard, 4 years into Frank Reich, you know, we thought the biggest question entering the season, and it probably still is Wentz the guy? Where do we stand on that? God, I don't know. Give me, you know, every week I have a different answer. Overall, you take the body of work in full, he's the guy, right? I mean, from what I've talked to people in the building, like, Carson Wentz is their quarterback, not just this year, but for their foreseeable future. Don't listen to whatever Colin Cowherd threw out the other day. But Carson needs to beat a good team, and he needs to finish a game, and he needs to avoid the disaster that was last week against the Titans. So I think you get that answer. I think Carson's played really well. I think he's played really well. He's had two games this season with a passer rating of above 130. That's better than any time in his career. So, you know, Frank's starting to get the best out of Carson again. Again, he needs to do it against a good team. But if you flip the side, I think that's going to be really interesting. How this defense plays down the stretch. I know the secondary is banged up and they're signing guys off the street. I know Darius is hurt. Okereke has played a lot better of late. I didn't think he started well. He's played better of late.
Yeah.
Buckner, Grover are doing everything they can up front. But without that pass rush, this defense isn't whole. So I think that's the angle to keep an eye on as we get into the last eight games is, does this defense figure it out? Because if it doesn't, I don't think those jobs are necessarily safe.
Well, if nothing else, there have to be some hard conversations.
Yeah.
At minimum.
Let's start there.
At minimum.
But Jim Irsay isn't in the business of going 8-9 and missing the playoffs.
No, I mean,
he's not. Like, believe me, he's not.
I mean, you're not in the business of getting worse as a football team either. And so, at least, you know, worse is sort of a difficult definition. But I mean, if you go by record, they're definitely worse, right? So I think that's kind of the point here. It's supposed to be. I get that progress in the NFL is not always linear.
Right, and that's an important point. Like, you can get better and still lose games. Like, I do believe that.
Yeah. At the same time, I do think that their results so far have shown that they're a very average team. And average was not the goal. It's never been the goal. And it shouldn't be the goal. Okay. But I want to just circle back to the Carson Wentz point you just made just now. I agree. I think we've seen enough. And you don't have to love Carson Wentz. I know that there's a range of opinions about Carson Wentz. That's fine. Like, it's America. You can feel however you want. However, you also have to be reasonable and realistic. They're not going to have a first-round pick. Stop it. They're not going to have a first-round pick. Shut up. Okay?
That's gone. Oh, my gosh. Like, come on. Like,
stop
you guys
it.
Know
I don't
Chris
care.
Ballard and how he works. Like, he's not.
I don't care what you read, where you read it. I don't care. They're not benching Carson Wentz. They're going to play. Their offense, first of all, their offense is one of the hottest in the NFL. They're going to play Carson Wentz. Okay? Stop it.
The team approached this season with the understanding that they do not have a first-round pick. And
yes.
That's not going to change, barring a huge injury that happens, like, very soon.
Right.
He's not going to sit. They're not going to tell Darius Leonard to fight through a throbbing ankle and then tell Carson to sit when he's healthy just to protect a 15th pick, 18th pick, whatever it is. It's just not happening.
Hey, Quentin, I know your back is killing you. But, hey, just, you know, we need you to just block a little longer because we're going to play Sam Ehlinger. You good with
Quentin,
that?
Quentin would kill someone. He would kill someone. He would.
It's like, hey, Eric Fisher, you know, look, I know you fought back from that Achilles, but, hey, buddy, sorry to tell you, but we're going to play the kid.
And I don't think they should, and I understand the value of a first-round pick, but that's not good ball. Like, that's just not how you run an organization. And the locker room,
it's a loser
what Chris Ballard talked about.
That's a loser mentality.
That he talked about the locker room bullshit. On day one. It is a loser mentality. And I think the fans need to understand that that's not how they think. And that's not how they should think.
I'll tell you what. If they do that, I will rip their ass to shreds. Because I think the message it sends is absolutely horrible. Horrible. And fans, you got listen, I love you guys. I love you guys. But listen, you got to stop thinking about everything in terms of offseason. There are other issues. It's not everything. Not everything is about, like, if you don't, it's either you win the Super Bowl or who we picking in the draft. Like, there are, there's degrees to this thing. You got to think of it in those terms. And at the end of the day, you're trying to build something. And look, I get that from a black and white standpoint. Yeah. The first round pick is extremely valuable. Of course it's valuable. The best players in the league are first round picks. However, I just think the message it sends to the rest of that locker room is the worst possible message you could send. It tells them that they're wasting their time.
I agree completely.
That's what it says. So no, 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 1,000 times no.
If you guys disagree, let us know. But we're pretty strong on this.
I'm willing to listen.
if you guys have ever watched a game 7 to 8 feet away from Chris Ballard, there is no way on planet Earth that dude is going to put Ellinger out there with Carson healthy just to protect the draft pick. He would kill himself. He would go crazy.
I haven't even asked this question of anybody. You know why?
It's a waste of time. Right.
I already know where they stand. First of all, what would Chris Ballard say if you asked him this? He might throw his phone
against the wall or do that. Yeah.
Like, are you crazy? Or he might just stare at you, like not even understanding what you're talking about, because that probably hasn't entered his mind.
I have seen, we both will run into Chris sometimes, you know, in the middle of a game, like just in a press box or whatever. And there have been times when, you know, they had had a bad play or a bad call, and he will stare through you like this is intense as you can imagine. As any fan out there, I can promise you the GM is just as intense during games. And there's just no way that they're just going to voluntarily sit their quarterback to protect a pick.
Yeah, the man broke his collarbone showing receivers how to block while he was coaching Division II football.
Okay? He threw a chair in the press box at Kingsville because they couldn't get a stop on fourth down. And then he said to Ed Dodds, who was sitting next to him, "Well, I'm going to hear about the NCAA on that one."
Yeah, that guy's going to sit the quarterback. Okay.
Right, and just sit there peacefully.
Right, right. So, come on, people. All right? So, I don't know. I got way off the subject there, but I think that just needed to be said. Okay?
Agreed.
All right. So, anyway, the point I was going to make, like, 5 minutes ago was Carson Wentz for all intents and purposes, he's the guy, unless he falls apart or something down the stretch. You always have to leave the possibility open. But I think we've seen, as you said, the body of work is pretty good, and their offense is rolling. So there's no sense in trying to blow that up at this point. He's the guy, okay?
No, with Pittman and Taylor, that's going to be fun to watch the next couple of years.
He's the guy. The problem is with a more complete team, and honestly, with a more complete team around him right now, and everybody pulling their weight, I mean, you got a chance with a guy like that. I don't know. I'm not saying that he's Josh Allen, but I mean, I'd take what we've seen from Carson Wentz over a whole lot of other quarterbacks right now. A lot of them. Probably most of them.
33 touchdowns, man. That's good.
Yeah, it is.
This city's spoiled, man, because Peyton threw for 49 and Luck threw for 40. I mean, 33 is really good.
I also think there's sort of a too many people have like preconceived notions about Carson Wentz. And I understand why, don't get me wrong. But you're either gonna come into this with an open mind or you're not. Okay. And if you don't come into it with an open mind, then you're just never going to see the guy for anything but what he has been as opposed to what he is now. So I get that last week happened, and I want to see him go up against these top-tier opponents as well. I want to see it. He's got a lot to prove. But at the same time, I mean, do you think some of these quarterbacks out there throwing 40 and 45 touchdowns, I mean, you think they're all doing that against the best defenses in the league? Everybody gets fat off of, you know, patsies. It is what it is. It's the nature of the beast. So, I mean, Andrew Luck threw 40 touchdowns that 1 year. I mean, he didn't do all that against the Patriots. I mean, come on, man. So, it is what it is. So, give the guy a little bit of a break, all right? He's done his part for the most part, and I think he's been extremely viable, and I think he's going to be their guy. So, but the question is going to be the rest of the team. So, you know, they got one check mark, and they got a whole lot of other blanks to fill out. So we'll see. So that's it. That's it. You've got an interesting football team there, Colts fans. And next week we should have, I would hope, a similar podcast against or coming off the game against the Jacksonville Jaguars. Otherwise, there's probably going to be some fire and brimstone here. So
Jaguars, maybe I'm wrong, but it just always seems like it's tougher than it needs to be.
Yeah. I mean,
Colts, like even Jaguars, last year, it was like winning you're in, and they had to take Jonathan Taylor for 250 to beat him in the fourth quarter. Now, that was before Urban Meyer showed up, so we'll see. But yeah, they should get to 5-5 next week before they head to a big, big, big one in Buffalo on November 21st.
Yep. So we'll see. I think if nothing else, at least sit back and enjoy, you know, the 45 points, because you don't get that every day. So there's that. So Take what you can get, okay? You know, don't be picky. It's the NFL.
It's the Colts season, man. The fans are smart enough to know that it's not going to be just perfect.
Right. Like, when did you guys get the right to be picky? Come on. Come on. That's a little reality check here. So, anyway, thanks for listening, guys. This is 1% Better. I'm Stephen Holder with Zach Kiefer. Stay tuned to The Athletic. Lots of mid-season NFL coverage out there. We've got tons of coverage, and Zach's working on something for next week that you won't want to miss, so stay tuned for that as well. Thanks for listening.